We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Fred and I's drafts are done. Shohei Ohtani talked, and we have a bunch of pitchers we're pushing up. All that on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Jeff Erickson here with Fred Zinke. Our podcast is sponsored by the good folks from Fantrax, Rival Fantasy, and Vivid Seats. Fred, Shohei Ohtani spoke yesterday. Wild story, hanging over all of our drafts over the weekend. If you had any late drafts, I mean, that's the first thing you have to talk about, first thing that we're thinking about there. What was your take on the story and his comments yesterday?
Well, maybe working backwards, I guess his comments yesterday were exactly what I figured they would be, right?
Right.
Like, he said, I didn't know anything about it and I didn't have anything to do with it. And I'm really disappointed that it happened. So like, what else is he going to say? So,
yeah, exactly. And so, that was my first take too, is what else is he going to say?
Yeah.
It has to be self-serving unless it's one of those, you know, guys, I have a real problem and I asked for your help. Nope. Nothing like that. So. That's right. The most obvious result.
Yes. It would have been surprising to me if he had said anything else, anything where he even said like that he knew anything about, I didn't know that's what he wanted the money for or something. If he had said anything like that, I would have been like, oh, wait a minute. So anyways, he said what he needed to say. And if I was a betting man, pun intended, I would say that he doesn't miss any baseball games this year, which is all that we really care about for fantasy.
That's the thing, is I'm not quite sure if there would be some fallout. I mean, it might not be in the term. It might not be in the terms of discipline too. It might also be in terms of it just, you know, holding his headspace there a little bit.
That's a totally different story. Yes. Could it hold his headspace? Maybe. We don't know. Yeah. It's so speculative. Like, this is someone who's like has performed under great duress at lots of times. And you know what I mean? Like, he's been a hitter and a pitcher and, like, he's no stranger to rising above challenges. So assuming he didn't know anything about it, we take him at his word. I don't know. It doesn't really matter if I believe him or not, because really for fantasy purposes, all I'm trying to parse out is, do I think he'll miss any games this year? And I would say no. Would you knock him down any spots in your rankings just for the distraction aspect? I didn't at all.
I mean, I knocked him down for the whole story. I think there's a non-zero chance he faces some discipline still.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Because I think whether, you know, and that some of that is whether you buy the story or not. I don't necessarily buy the story. At least there's a non-zero chance. I have him at 34.
34?
Yeah. So here's my rationale. I was drafting 1, 30, and 31 over the weekend. And I asked myself, would I take him if he fell to me? You know, and if he fell to me, obviously there would be some sort of other development that would have pushed him that far down. I don't think it would have been a room full of people getting cold feet. Although he did drop to 22 in my draft. And the answer was no. I wouldn't want to draft him there still. So maybe I'm super risk averse. Yeah. Maybe I'm Chicken Little. I don't know. It's possible. I've talked a lot about it with Scott. And I've talked a lot about it on the XM show. So I want to hear more your opinion than mine at this point in time, because I, you know, I'm willing to be persuaded, but I don't think people need to hear me say the same thing again.
I did hear you say some of those things because I did hear you talk with Scott, and I have heard you on Sirius a couple of times in the last couple of days. So, so I would have taken him at 30, 31 for sure. So to put that in perspective, like you were considering taking Kevin Gausman, like a pitcher recovering from a sore shoulder, at 30, 31. I feel like Gausman's much more risky than the odds of Ohtani being suspended.
You might be right about that.
So now you could always say pitching's at a premium, whatever, but I guess if I went back, I would say a healthy Gausman versus a healthy Ohtani who goes earlier in the main, even in the main, Ohtani goes earlier. And I think the risk factor on Gausman's greater. Right. Anyways, I can see the case for moving Ohtani down behind like Austin Riley, Yordan Alvarez, Jose Ramirez, guys who are all like very similar to him, like moving him down a few spots. But I feel like I just think the odds of him being suspended are pretty low. So I feel like middle of round two, like once we get about pick 2025, I think it's just worth the risk at that point. Like he's healthy from a hitting standpoint. He's healthy. A healthy Ohtani is vastly superior to Luis Robert or, you know, Gunnar Henderson or something like that. So I think at that point, it's just worth the risk. I just think it's worth the risk.
Yeah. And I can get behind that. My thought is too, that he is coming back from Tommy John surgery. He might not hit for power the first couple weeks.
Yeah.
Now I had a comment in my article, like, don't you mean the brace procedure? Yeah, I do. But that's still in the Tommy John universe. It's the same procedure as Bryce Harper last year. And Bryce Harper struggled to hit for power when he came back. I think when you have the surgery matters. Ohtani had it a month before Harper. So again, I could be overly cautious with him, but
where did you have him before this story?
About 15. I had him a little below.
Yeah. So you did dock him a lot. Like you docked him almost 20 spots.
I did.
So really like you're saying, so the surgery and everything else is not actually a factor really in your assessment.
It's a factor because I think people were drafting him 5, 6, 7, 8. And I was drafting him at 15. So
I didn't really, I didn't really feel like he was going that high. Like I felt like in all my drafts, he went like 10 to 12.
So he was going that high this weekend.
Okay.
In the main. And I was, you know, there was a draft where he went fifth in the main that the night of the news on Wednesday night when it broke, he went fifth in a main event. Okay. I could see it. I mean,
ADP's 11.
Yeah. And here's the other thing, Fred, is, you know, I was sitting at 1.1. So where I had him was kind of a moot point. I drafted on Wednesday night an online championship, which is the 12 teamer. And I was sitting sixth, also a moot point because I wasn't going to take him six.
Yeah.
And I wasn't. And he doesn't get there at 19. So, again, didn't matter.
Yeah. His max main event pick is 24. Yeah, like I said, I can see when I look at this main ADP, Trey Turner, Judge, Alvarez, Ramirez, Olson, I could see bumping all of them up ahead of him. But I think he belongs after that. So, for example, Bryce Harper, would I bump Bryce Harper ahead of him? No, I don't think so. Doesn't Bryce Harper have a sore back? What am I more worried about? Bryce Harper, who's missed a lot of games over his career, having continued injury issues with his sore back or something else, or Ohtani getting suspended. I think I'm more worried about Harper.
Ohtani's missed a number of games over his career too.
For sure. Yeah.
I wouldn't say Ohtani's a healthier Harper player than Harper.
Harper having this late March.
Yeah. He came back and it was action over the weekend though.
Playing
again.
Yeah.
Not playing well, but he is playing. Hitting 179 this spring. I don't think that moves the needle for me at all, but just saying.
No, for sure.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Let's move off of Ohtani.
Yeah.
Other big news items. You mentioned Kevin Gausman. He looked great.
Yes.
He looked great yesterday. Now the line was they wanted him to throw 60 to 65 pitches. And they wanted him to see if that way it can avoid him being on the IL. He pitched 3 innings, 52 pitches. But he also struck out 7 batters. So I would have liked to see more length out of him, but I'm encouraged by the performance.
Oh yeah, me too. Obviously, as both a Jays fan and someone who has Gausman in a couple leagues, so I moved him after that performance back up. I didn't put him as low as most people. In fact, I drafted him Sunday night in a league in round three, and kind of planned around doing that. So that was before he made the appearance Monday. Just the fact that he was pitching in a game on Monday.
Yep.
Made me start to move him back up. So I moved him back up to SP5. Now I previously had him at 4. So I left George Kirby ahead of him, but I bumped him back up to my SP5. Yeah, I'm encouraged. If I was still drafting, that's kind of where I have him. I would be comfortable taking him around pick 30 or something like that.
SP5 main event is like pick 22, just so you know. That's the way it was going over the weekend, but I feel you though, too. I mean, we're talking about, when I say him, Kevin Gausman, committed to taking Gausman at the 2-3 turn if he fell to me. And I had to commit myself to that on Saturday morning. Prior to that, I had not been there. I had not been there with Tarik Skubal. It turns out it didn't matter. Gausman went at pick 22. Skubal went at pick 27. And then Tyler Glasnow went pick 29. If I wanted to take a pitcher at the 2-3 turn, I would have had to take Yamamoto or someone of that ilk, or that next year drop down, Zach Gallen, any one of those type of pitchers.
Yeah, now Gossman's main event ADP is 36, but I can see where it started to make a resurgence last weekend.
Right.
News that he was going to pitch on Monday. So if there are remaining main event drafts, there's 40 so far.
There are some next couple of nights.
I could see him jumping back ahead of Skubal. I could see him. Maybe I could see him jumping back. I would take him over Pablo Lopez now. Gausman also, it looks like he's going to go in the Jays rotation as their fifth starter. That puts him, next Monday in Houston. So he will have a two-start week right off the top. So
yeah, against Houston, the Yankees, though, just so you know.
Yeah, so the matchups aren't good. Although with your ace, you'd think
you're still starting him.
Yeah. And my thought on that, at first when I thought he might start against the Rays, but not be able to throw five innings. I don't think he'll throw five innings the first time out.
I don't think so either. And maybe not even the second time.
Maybe not the second time out, but at least there's a chance he throws five innings the second time out. Depends how well he pitches. And even if he doesn't throw five innings in either start, maybe you get 8 innings out of him next week and 9 or 10 strikeouts, which still makes him worth using. I thought about whether I would use him this weekend over, if he was pitching in one of the first 4 games against Tampa, whether I would use him over a pitcher who he can't get a win. So I was like, would I use him over a pitcher who could get a win? I was trying to debate that. Anyways, it's a moot point. He's not going to start till Monday.
Yeah. And they're saying 65 pitches to 70 pitches in his next outing. That's just an estimate, but that could be where they're at.
So let's say probably 4 innings. If it's 5, it's gone really well.
Right.
Which could happen with a pitcher of his quality. But if it's 5, it's gone really well.
All right. So that's Kevin Gausman. Before we move on to other injuries, quick note from our friends at Fantrax. Fantrax is the most customizable fantasy platform in the industry, offering the greatest fantasy experience for your dynasty, keeper, redraft, and best ball leagues. Coming from another service, Fantrax makes it easy. Fantrax can import any of your current leagues and customize if needed. Fantrax offers the most in-depth player pool in the industry, including minor league players. Do you need a customizable commissioner service for your fantasy league? Fantrax offers more customization than any other platform. Waivers, categories, scoring system, schedule. Fantrax offers custom solutions for all that and more, and it's all free. Sign up for free today and be entered to win an official MLB signed jersey from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Simply go to Fantrax.com/RotoWire and sign up today. That's Fantrax.com/RotoWire. Fantrax, the home of fantasy sports. All right, Fred, more injury news. Let's start with the hitters, because I think, and then we'll get over to the pitching side of things. Dylan Carlson got hurt last night, and he's going on the IL. It's a sprained AC joint in his shoulder. Lars Nootbaar is going to begin the year on IL. He's making progress. Tommy Edman is on IL to begin the year. They are hurting for outfielders. They trade away Tyler O'Neill. They traded away Richie Palacios. Who knew that trading away Richie Palacios would hurt their depth so much? But they're hurting there. So they're going to call up Victor Scott, who they had just got sent down. Can I interest you and a Victor Scott.
Sure, but I don't think I'll be the guy. I don't think I'll be the guy who gets Victor Scott this Sunday in Fab. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think I'm going all in on Victor Scott. I feel like in most of my teams, I have a solid steals base. I don't think I'm going to win steals, but I'm not panicked about it. Victor Scott, I mean, I think most people are familiar with how fast he is.
But in case they aren't.
Stole 94 bases last year, which is really fast.
Only a 16% strikeout percentage, too, in the minors. So yeah, I like that,
In the minors, in 163 career games, so that's roughly a major league season, he has 107 steals. So pretty fast. And doesn't have pop, but has not no pop. He hit 9 home runs last year. In that 163 games in his minor league career, has 11 homers. So not completely no pop, but he'll grow into that probably a little more. Mm-hmm. So, but as far as looking at the immediate future, my concern with Victor Scott is that he's played 66 games in AA and hasn't played above that level. We'll see to what degree he's major league ready. I think profiles in that Cardinals lineup as someone who hits at the bottom, not the top. I just don't think he can have a major league on base, no matter how fast he is. Like, I think we've advanced beyond that. Like, you want people at the top of your lineup who get on base.
Right.
So that's, I don't think, going to be him right away. So he's a bottom of the lineup hitter. He's probably a pure speed play. I feel like people dump all over Esturi Ruiz, but yet people really want to pick up Victor Scott. And to me, like, I would way rather have Esturi Ruiz, who does go, I guess, in the middle rounds of draft. Someone still takes him, but a lot of people say they don't want a player like that on their team. Victor Scott is that guy.
Well, and the thing is, I think it's one thing to spend high draft capital on Estuary Ruiz. That's another to fab a player.
Yep, to
like
fab
that.
Victor Scott, for sure.
I mean,
there's probably a team in every league where he is a risk worth taking.
I think almost every team in the league it's a risk worth taking. I'm a little bit more bullish than you.
So you think he could stick around when Lars Nootbaar comes back?
I think so. I mean,
which will be in not too long, 2 or 3 weeks.
So who is Dylan Carlson? Who is Alec Burleson to hold Victor Scott back? Why couldn't it be them that get sent down? Why couldn't it have been? And Mike Ciani's going to make the roster too. You know, I think there's a pretty reasonable chance that Victor Scott, if he, pun intended, hits the ground running. If he hits the ground running, I think we might be looking at someone who earns that job. He's a prospect. You know what? And that's one of the things that it's not just, I think he's a better hitter than Ruiz. He's a better hitter than Delino DeShields Jr., a better hitter than Billy Hamilton. I think there's some pop there. I think there's some ability there that those guys didn't have.
Yeah. Okay. I can see that. I think just Nootbaar coming back, you're right, won't kill him, because Nootbaar could take over from Burleson in left field. I think Burleson stays on the team. Like, I don't think he gets sent down, but like you said, Ciani could get sent down. Maybe the pivotal thing for Victor Scott will be what happens with Tommy Edman, because Edman's going to open the year on the IL. I feel like his timetable is less known.
Right.
And Edman's someone who can play all over the diamond, but if you have Nolan Gorman at second, if you've got Arenado at third, Edman, I don't think, is going to replace Mason Winn at shortstop. So Edman probably fits into the outfield DH mix. So if he's going to fit into the outfield DH mix, then maybe that gets Scott sent down. But we don't have a timetable on Edman. So, Scott's going to get a few weeks here of run to show what he's got. So you're right. So if I want to jump and just play devil's advocate, I guess, to myself, then the counterpoint is you could actually get if you bid heavily on him this week, you could actually get a full season of base stealing out of Victor Scott.
Right.
Like, he's not going to steal 90 bases in the majors as a rookie, but you could actually get 40 steals out of him or something.
Indeed. The Brewers had another injury. They lost Garrett Mitchell due to a broken hand. This is a tough one. They're already having some other negative news happen this spring. What are the ramifications with this injury?
Yeah, so I think Sal Frelick will go to the outfield. And then I think the interesting part is, does this get Joey Ortiz a chance to be their starting third baseman throughout April?
Right.
And I think there's a good chance that could happen. I don't think Ortiz is that exciting in fantasy, but he could be someone who cracks 15-team rosters.
Yeah, I think I look at it that way too. I think it's, you know, it's one of those things where, like, I think Ortiz makes the roster. They in Montesario also gets more playing time. Yep. And Sal Frelick is a guy that they're thinking is going to play a lot of third base, and it now looks like he'll probably play a lot of outfield instead. They've got, you know, they've got Yelich, Churio, and then Frelick will probably be in the outfield now. They remember they sent down Joey Weimers. Gary Sanchez is going to be the DH more often than not. So I think that's how it kind of fleshes that. Now, it could be Weimer that gets called back up too. That's still a possibility. Frelick's got to be able to hit. Ortiz has got to be able to hit. You know, someone's got to, you know, they got to hold on to those jobs. Bryce Terang, by the way, is, you know, not fully established yet. He's not a made man yet. He struggled offensively last year too. So a lot of flux
really with that roster right now, right? Like there's a lot of flux with that Brewers roster. Like I know you drafted Frelick in your main event league, which I think is fine. But I don't think much changes with him now. In fact, maybe it's a detriment to him because he won't pick up that third base eligibility you were hoping for. At least he probably will eventually, but he won't pick it up as quickly. With Frelick, he doesn't hit lefties well. So I think he's still the same guy who's going to play the same amount. They just have all these pieces like Ortiz and Terang, Montesario. They need some of these guys, a couple of them, to emerge. Right. They're all like dart throws right now in fantasy. I would say, going back to our Victor Scott debate, like I would take Victor Scott, even though I kind of poo-pooed him at the beginning, I would take him in a heartbeat over guys like Ortiz. They just don't have the upside, or even Terang. Terang can actually steal some bases. If Terang stole 25 bases this year, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. But I would take, for example, I would just roll the dice on Victor Scott. I think Victor Scott is someone who gets a triple digit bid in NFBC leagues where he's available this on Sunday, whereas Ortiz gets like a $40 bid, something like that.
Right.
$60 bid.
So that's Garrett Mitchell. Fracture in his left hand. We'll know about exactly how long he'll be out, hopefully soon. But guy can't catch a break. You know, he had the same issue. You know, he had not the same issue. He got hurt last year too. Devastating injury after a decent start. Okay. One more hitter injury and we'll move on to the pitching side of things. DJ LeMahieu is going to begin the year on the IL. He was projected to be their leadoff hitter and third baseman. He's got that foot injury there. It's something that he's been dealing with for a while. He's got some inflammation in addition to the bone bruise in his right foot. They said that he could be back as soon as the Yankees home opener on April 5th, so it might not be long-term. But the Yankees roster right now, Fred, is wild.
Yeah.
They have no real – I mean, their backup second baseman – is probably going to be Jamai Jones because Oswaldo Cabrera is going to start third. Cabrera is also the backup shortstop. Jones is also the backup third base. Point is, they don't have much in the way of infielders. If something happens to Volpe or Glaber, you know, they're really cooked. I mean, this is it's a real big drop off there in the middle infield and in corner and third base spots.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, they could really use getting LeMahieu back quickly. The Yankees are really interesting in that the roster has like such massive high points with Judge and Soto, and potential with some other guys like Rizzo on a possible bounce back, Stanton on a possible bounce back. Torres is solid. Like it's got potential, but then, like you said, it's so paper thin where and they don't even have that many injuries. It's really just it's Oswald Peraza is out and LeMahieu. I know Jason Dominguez is out, but he was never part of the roster really. Like he might be at some point, but they haven't run into a rash of injuries really. But yeah, the roster, the lineup is really thin. It could go south in a hurry if they got a couple more injuries. As for LeMahieu, I'm interested in your opinion on this, Jeff. Like, I was like, do you hold him? Like, let's say, I guess if he's back next week, you definitely hold him. But if he was out longer, I only had him valued when he was healthy as replacement level. It's hard to look past the fact that he's the leadoff hitter in front of Judge and Soto. Like, that just makes you say, like, he could score 100 runs. But he probably won't because he's not that good of a player at this point. And there's basically no steals and probably only 10 or 15 homers. So I can't get too fired up about maybe 85 runs or something like that if it comes with 12 homers and two steals and a batting average that doesn't really help or hurt you.
I think he's barely draftable.
Yeah. So, like I said, I had him as replacement level, like a guy who you took as your last hitter or maybe your first bench hitter before the injury. And most of the reason he was draftable was the projected leadoff spot in front of Soto and Judge.
Yeah. I just the leadoff hitter aspect of that, his past track record, I guess, is fine. Yep. But even prior to last year, the decline phase had already started. So he wasn't a guy I was targeting at all. I see why people might want to draft him. And in fact, my friend Jason did draft him in our main. So I'm not trying to drag you, Jason. Don't worry. But that's not a guy I was targeting at all. So no, I would not hold on to him. But then again, he was hurt prior to our draft, so I wouldn't have drafted him, period.
Right.
So anyways, we got some pitcher injuries, but before we hit that, we're going to hit a note from our friends at Rival Fantasy. It's officially fantasy baseball season, and it's time for MLB Best Ball on Rival Fantasy. That's right. Rival Fantasy now has Best Ball. Full season lobbies are live now until opening day with both fast and slow drafts. Then weekly and daily drafts will be available from opening day through the end of the World Series. Best Ball is all the fun of the draft without the season-long management. Enter a league, draft your squad, and the app does the rest. No need to set your lineup or make waiver moves. The highest score at the end of the season, regular season, will be the winners. Invite your friends and start drafting for the 2024 fantasy baseball season today. Sign up at joinrival.com/rotowire for a $200 deposit match and $25 in free entries. Welcome to the future of fantasy sports. Welcome to Rival Fantasy. I did play one of their drafts. We had a bunch of Rotowire people doing it, a $5 best ball draft on the drive to Vegas. Don't worry, animals. I was not the driver. I was a passenger. But it was fun. So check it out. joinrival.com/rotowire. You can go get that deposit match. Also, we're on the Blue Wire Network. Here are their ads.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Thank you very much for those of you streaming along with us for that brief little pause. And for those of you listening on podcast, we thank you too. All right, Fred, a couple other, let's hit up the pitching injury. The one that really was big, obviously for me, was Paul Sewald going on the IL. I talked about how I was kind of big on him, especially early in drafts. Well, luckily I didn't get him late in drafts, but still hurts. He's got a grade 2 oblique strain.
Yeah, so I've heard a lot of people trying to predict. 6 weeks seems to be the common consensus. So that's a big one. I think if you have Sewald in a fab league, like I think you overspend to get Kevin Ginkle unless something unusual happens this weekend. Mm-hmm. If Ginkle gets a save, I think you overspend because you need to keep the ship afloat until he gets back.
I can see that there.
Right? Don't you think you just it sucks, but you have to overspend to get him.
Yep. That's right. I think that's probably right. And I'm aching to do it because I hate overspending in labor in particular.
Yep.
So I have them in four leagues. I have Paul Sewald in four leagues. Two were draft champion formats, draft and hold formats in January. So nothing to be done there except just don't start them. And in fact, I have Ginkle in one of the two leagues. Okay. And then I have them in LABR, mixed labor, which we did in mid-February. And then I have them in one other league. Oh, it's an NL only home league team. So I will definitely, that's the one where I definitely will have to spend high on getting him. But if you don't have Sewald already to begin with, how much are you spending on Kevin Ginkle?
Well, I guess that answer. So I was thinking about that today, actually. If you have two healthy closers right now, I think you mostly just price and force on them. So when I say price and force, I don't know, in an NFBC league, like $80, something like
keep
that.
Keep them honest bid. All right. Yeah,
just to keep them honest bid. Because you could get 6 weeks of saves. 6 weeks of saves would be good. Like if you have two healthy closers, but you could use Ginkle for 6 weeks, you know, get a lead in saves and then, you know, have those closers just keep the lead. Like I think that's worthwhile. So, but I would more just keep them honest because I may need to save that for other needs that I have later.
If you just keep, you know, maybe every once in a while, keep them honest bid wins, but
yep.
More often than not, all you're doing is just
keeping them honest.
Yeah. And what does that accomplish? It makes you feel better that they couldn't get a windfall.
You don't want to let the Sewald owner away with getting Ginkle for $40.
Right. Out of
$1,000 fab league. Yeah. Or say in our labor league, like if you're going to go ahead and get Ginkle, I don't want to let you get Ginkle for $5.
Okay.
Like, I want to make sure that you've
paid for your mistake. You want me to feel the pain, Jeff, a little bit longer. Yep.
No, actually Ginkle is actually worth to me, whatever, even as not a Sewald owner, Ginkle's might be worth to me $8 to get a bunch of saves early in the season. And then I just drop them when Sewald comes back. So it's not an arm injury, so the odds are like Sewald will come back. I feel like the odds are pretty good. Like there won't be like delays and all the things. So I think he probably will come back on like relatively on time. So I don't see like a path to Ginkle. Like what if you get 3 months out of him? Like it's probably not going to happen with an oblique,
right?
But yeah, I'd say price and force. I wouldn't go crazy for him. I think there is sometimes a lesson in what happened with Sewald and Ginkle, where if you draft early, it's if there's an obvious handcuff to your closer who doesn't require like a 20th round pick, it's sometimes worth taking them in the last couple rounds because you're buying the insurance for all of spring training. And then you could just cut them in the first fab run. Yeah, I've done that before. Right. I didn't do it in our league this year because the handcuffs specifically for the closers I took went earlier. And I wasn't willing to just to buy that insurance. I wasn't willing to spend like around 23 pick, but as around 28, 29, 30 pick, like only for early drafts to buy that insurance. I wouldn't do it if I was drafting right now.
Yeah. I think that makes sense.
Yeah. And then cause you're holding Ginkle for all of spring training. He's not impacting your ability to set lineups. And then you just drop him on the first fab run. Now what's crazy is if I had done that whole plan in our labor league, I would have dropped him on Sunday probably.
Yeah.
Because I would have been like, we made it through spring training. Sewald's fine. Now I can drop him.
Right.
Oh, that would have been terrible.
Brutal.
So yeah, anyways, I bet he goes for double digits for sure, even in our labor league where it's harder to go high. I think he'll, just the time of year people get aggressive. And I think in some NFBC leagues, he's going to go for 200.
Yeah.
Something now, like that.
The tough part is like, you know, I, if you have Seawald, I mean, it becomes a lot more important. Yep. I missed it. Now, let me ask you this. So not everybody had a first run of Fab on this past weekend.
Yep.
If you still have a Fab before the season starts or even next weekend as your first Fab,
yep.
Griffin Jacks, Kevin Ginkle, or Milwaukee reliever to be named later, who's going first? Or who are you putting a prior priority on?
Well, okay. So if I, so the answer will end up being whoever gets saves on the weekend. Like, mm-hmm. like if Joel Piamps gets one or two saves on the weekend, he'll go for the most.
Yeah.
Because he's got the job for half
longer.
A season.
Yeah.
Exactly. So if a Milwaukee reliever gets saves on the weekend and there's an inclination that he could get more saves, especially if one of them got two, he would get the most. If a Milwaukee reliever got a save, but then the manager comes out after the game and is like, yeah, guys, we're mixing and matching. It was him tonight. It'll be someone else next time. Then I'm back to Ginkle. So if I was doing it right now, I would probably take Ginkle because I think I think even Griffin Jacks is competing with Brock Stewart. Like we like Jacks, but it could be Stewart or they could share. The Twins used to share before Duran. I think I would take Ginkle right now. But if a Brewers reliever started to emerge on the weekend, I think I would go him first, then Ginkle.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Because I feel like the timeline on Duran and Seawald is probably like similar enough, but Ginkle is probably has a better odds of getting all the saves than either the Twins relievers do so far. But again, Griffin Jacks gets a couple saves on the weekend, then.
And Duran's got a week ahead, you know.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I can see that. Yeah. All right. Let's move on. That was the whole Seawald Ginkle situation there.
Yeah.
Brian Woo went on the IL with the elbow inflammation. This is a guy that has had elbow issues before. He hadn't pitched in a while. This was something kind of like, unlike Seawald, who had pitched on Saturday, Woo hadn't pitched in like 10 days. So maybe we should have had some sort of inference that this was going to happen, but I wasn't ready for it myself. Now, I think that's going to be a while because it's shut down from throwing for 7 to 10 days. Then he's going to have to ramp back up. And they made a point of saying that, too. So I know you're not big on Emerson Hancock, but you might get a whole month from him here.
No, actually, I think my note in our notes, I don't know if I'm big on him, but no, I'm interested in him. Like, I don't think he's a must add, but. Like Emerson Hancock is a prospect. Like he's a good prospect. 6th overall pick in the 2020 draft. His career ERA in the minors 3.77. He's a strikeout per inning in the minors. Like he's not Ricky Tiedemann or something, but he's a good prospect. And Seattle's a good place to pitch. And I don't think Emerson Hancock is someone who has to be added in 12 team leagues on Sunday, but I think in 15s. Like, I think he's at least worth a look. Like, he's at least in your waterfall on Sunday.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say, like, I'm high on him, but I'm definitely interested in him.
Yeah. He was a first-round pick, and he being Emerson Hancock, was a first-round pick in 2020. It took a little while because he's a college draftee. Doesn't have the biggest strikeout upside, which is the thing that's concerned with. You know, the fastball is not as dominant as people thought it might be. But not only is he, you know, is he going to get a spot for a while, but Hancock is going to get two starts next week, home start against Cleveland and a road start against the Brewers. And, you know, neither of those scare me. I mean, the Brewers one could be scary, I guess a little bit, but I also think though, that, I mean, it's certainly within the range of acceptable two steps.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I don't know if I have the guts to roll him out yet. I don't think I do, but I'm definitely interested. How about this? Is Brian Wu a drop?
Yeah. Joel Hinard was just asking that right when you said that. It's pretty funny.
In NFBCs, if with no IL, if we're looking at 7 to 10 days without throwing, then the full ramp up, like he's out at least a month. I would try to be stubborn and hold him. I felt like he was overdrafted in the main. His ADP was 154. I felt like that was too much, but man, if I invested an 11th round pick in him, I think I'm going to try to hold him.
Wu was a 10th round pick in my main. He went at 10.1. So 136 in my league. And you know, that might be a logical fallacy, you know, assigning, you know, where you drafted him, making, you know,
I know I shouldn't
decision.
Yeah.
But I think I'd hold him. I think I would at least. I believe in the talent. I mean, he was before he got shut down, he was having a great K to walk. I mean, he was missing a bunch of bats. Yeah.
If you drafted him as your third starter, I think you owe it to yourself to give him a month. You obviously, if you draft him as a third starter or so, you believed in him.
Yeah. So I think I'd hold him.
Yeah. I think I would too.
Yeah. All right.
In a 12, that's a different story. In a 12, if I had other injuries, I might have to let him go.
One more injury note. Justin Verlander is starting to throw he's going to throw, I think he's supposed to throw two innings of BP today. I'm very, very queasy on this one here.
And why, what makes you queasy?
It's a shoulder.
His shoulder and his age.
It's the age.
Yeah.
And it's the fact that he struggled late last year.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So you have no shares.
I have a keeper share back in October. I decided to keep him first pitch Arizona XFL league. Yeah. Knowing what I know now, I wish I shouldn't have kept him. Would have been rather had the salary flexibility to get anybody else. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So his main ADP is 195. I don't have him as high as that. Like there's
nor do I. I have a 200 range price on him.
Yeah. So I guess it's for both of us, it's probably a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy type thing where we were concerned about him already. So we would be ready to jump off right now. Like I'd say, offer him out in trades and leagues where you can and things like that. But the people who drafted him at 195, they believe in him more than you and I do. So I guess they're in, they see the sunny side of this, which is admittedly not hard to see. We're talking about a Hall of Famer who's still even last year with the way, like he still finished last year with a 3.22 ERA and a 1.13 WHIP. So, we'll see where it goes from here. But I guess if you drafted him, you probably feel good. Like we're optimistic on him. So he's on his way back according to the Astros. So I think you ride it out.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. Let's talk about the new pool of starting pitchers. But before we do that, our final read for today, it's an old but new friend, Vivid Seats. Finally, baseball is back. This MLB season, knock it out of the park with Vivid Seats and score great tickets to the biggest games of the year. Every fastball, every home run, and every eye-popping play of your favorite team, live and in person. Plus, with Vivid Seats rewards, you can earn rewards with every single purchase. Just buy 10 tickets, then cash in your credit toward your free 11th ticket. Talk about an easy win. And here's a pro reward tip. When buying tickets for your whole group, split the bill and make progress towards your free 11th ticket even faster. From behind the dugout to the upper deck, Vivid Seats has great tickets for all the 2024 games that matter to you. Just visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. See vividseats.com/rewards for terms and conditions. Thanks to Vivid Seats. I've used them in the past. I think I've had no problems with them at all. Good stuff from them. So, hopefully they continue to be pretty good with that. Let's talk about starting pitchers, Fred. Let's talk about the guys that all these new ones that were entering the pool that we weren't really thinking about in February, but we are thinking about now, whether it's Bowden Francis or Tyler McGill, Garrett Crochet, maybe we're thinking about, but we weren't really thinking that he'd be the opening day starter. You know, it's an interesting pool. Some really high upside guys and some other guys we're not quite so sure about yet.
That's right. So where I kind of came up with the idea to talk about this group of players today is when I was doing my final draft on Sunday night, I kind of went back and looked at my rankings and projections for way back when we did labor or when I started my Tout Wars draft and things like that. Every late round pitcher at that point, like at the beginning of March, had either moved up, so they were like round 20 or earlier, or they were off my list because something had happened. So I was like, man, like who do you take? Who do you take as your SP7? Who do you take on your bench for starters? Like that's important, getting late round starters. I was like, where did all these guys go? The Miles Michaelis types or Dane Dunnings, like they're still there because. Mm-hmm. But if you don't want to take them, if you want to chase someone who might be better than that. Might be worse, but might be better than that with the late rounds. If you want to take some shots, I was like the guys who I was taking shots on 3 weeks ago, they're either moved because of all, and this happens every year, because of all the pitcher right. injuries, they either moved up 5 rounds or have come off the list because either they were one of the ones injured or they've moved up because of supply right. and demand. So I was like, okay. So I went and looked at main event ADP. I looked past pick, I think it was 290, and looked at, you know, interesting starters who went past pick 290 in main event drafts. And that is the list we came up with. And I'm interested to see, some of these pitchers have jumped more onto my radar than others. I'm interested to see who jumped on your radar. So I thought maybe we could go through them quickly and just see how you're feeling about them.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's Max, start off.
You want to start with Max Meyer?
Sorry. Let's start my Max Meyer. Let's do that. Boy, a very hard guy to project. So, you know, again, if you're using previous stats to do your projections, you're going to be at a loss with a lot of these guys. Mm-hmm. Really difficult, because Max Meyer, you know, pitched one game in the majors in 2022 and a handful in the minors in 2022. Yep. Didn't pitch at all last year.
That's right. But the whole point with all these pitchers is to chase upside, because you're going to hold all of these pitchers for 2 weeks and see how they start the season. And then you're going to cut some of them and hopefully you find some diamonds in the rough. That's the whole reason that you draft these guys instead of Miles Michaelis. So the upside pick, and I always like to poop on Miles Michaelis because you took him in some drafts and I kind of,
including the main, by the way,
and you can take a Miles Michaelis, but you don't want your bench or your SP 6-5-6 and your bench to be 4 Miles Michaelises.
Right. You want to have some upside.
Yeah. Right. I think you're just heading towards having not great ratios. So you can have right. a Miles Michaelis. You just don't want too many of them. Max Meyer, as far as upside goes, is really good. He was the 3rd overall pick in the 2020 MLB draft. So that's the level of prospects we were talking about here, to go 3rd overall. Like you said, he's had injuries this spring in very limited action. He did pitch very well. To earn the spot in the rotation. Miami's a great place to pitch. They do have, like, they've done, I'd say, a pretty good job with their pitchers over the years. We've seen lots of fantasy value come out of that rotation. So I think he's a really nice upside play. As far as whether he'll stick in the rotation, like when Braxton Garrett comes back, eventually when Edward Cabrera comes back, I think if he's pitching well, he could stick, because both he and Ryan Weathers, which we could talk about together, they're both in the rotation. Garrett should be back in a couple weeks, and Garrett will push one of them out. But Meyer could outpitch Weathers and be the guy who keeps the spot till Cabrera comes back. And we don't know what'll happen with Cabrera.
The Marlins have 8 potentially viable starters.
Yep.
Luzardo, Puck, Rogers, Weathers, Meyer, and then the 3 hurt guys, Yuri Perez, Braxton Garris, and Edward Cabrera. You know, they're like the Reds hitters, you know, and, you know, this is why you have depth. You know, oh, it's gone. Now, you know, there's no depth now. Now they need all these guys.
Yep.
But, yeah, they're you know, Meyer has the prospect pedigree. I can see it for sure.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite guys in the list. I said a few weeks ago that I thought the Marlins could be, like, sneaky better than, maybe not good, but better than people think. And it was because of all this pitching depth. I still wish that they had signed a JD Martinez to replace Avisel Garcia as their DH. I think that lineup, if you added 1 or 2 more pieces to it, I think they do have the pitching. So not amazing pitching, but plenty of pitching. And like you said, enough interesting depth pitchers. Yeah, I think Meyer's one of my favorite guys in the list. I actually have no shares. I have one Same. Share of Weathers that I got actually in our labor league. I think I got him for $2 or something like that. In the first fab run, I think I would rather have Meyer.
Yeah, I have 0 shares. Also, our good friend Chris List took him in my main. Took him in the 19th round in a 15th.
Wow. So that's the buzz on Meyer. He, like, when I said he's my favorite guy, that, or one of my favorite,
everybody's
about to discuss. Yeah, he's most people's favorite, and it comes from that high prospect pedigree.
Yep. All right, next guy on the list. We can incorporate Ryan Weathers. Yep. Let's talk Ryan Weathers too, since he's his teammate. New franchise away from San Diego. Think he does better in Miami? You think about the same? What do you think?
I think he could do better in Miami, not necessarily because it's Miami instead of San Diego, just because I think that maybe he could be up to the point. So this is another guy with great pedigree as far as the 7th overall pick. In the we talked a lot of really high draft picks today. 7th overall pick, but way back in 2018. But he's coming out of high, but he's different pathway. He came out of high school, but never really hasn't had any success in the majors. So like you said, he's another guy. If you look at the stats, you're not really interested. But if you look at that pedigree, he's still only 24. So we're going way back to 2018 when he was drafted. He's actually younger than Meyer. He's still only 24. He also had a good spring, 21 strikeouts in 18 innings, good ratios. I fabbed him in labor for a reason. I think he's a interesting dart throw. His first start's going to come at home against the Pirates this weekend. That's a pretty fair matchup for his first start. So I was like, you know what? I'll take him. I'll risk the one start against the Pirates that it won't be a blow up and then kind of go from there. I think he's someone you draft, should be owned in 15s. I don't know if he has to be owned in 12s, but I think he's close.
Right. I think there's some comments on AJ Puck in the chat saying, Jordan says he thinks Puck will end up a reliever or a closer or
it's possible,
you know, or he's actually asking, or will he stay in the rotation? And the point is he hasn't pitched very many innings in a season before. It's true. He hasn't avoided the injury bug. This is where Liss would say something about go where the puck is moving, not where it's been. And I think that would apply. But there's a whole class of pitchers this year in that Michael King, AJ Puck, Jordan Hicks.
Yep.
I'm a bit of a hypocrite because I'm not really in on Hicks. I got him in the reserve rounds of one NL only league. That was kind of a weird league as far as that goes to get him that cheaply. But I thought that was the right price. I don't feel like paying starting prices for him yet. Mm-hmm. I'm big on Michael King. Mm-hmm. So maybe because he did it as a starter last year, and that's the difference between him and versus Hicks and versus Puck.
Yep. That makes a lot of sense. And you can't paint them all with the same brush. You can't just be like, well, I don't like starters turn relievers, or I do. Like, you have to examine them all individually. There's a mm-hmm. reason King's going so much earlier than the others, and it's the success down the stretch last year. With Puck, I'm treating him as a starter, not a starter who's going to throw a massive amount of innings, but mm-hmm. the Marlins need him in the rotation right now. The way things will go, we'll see if they need him. You know who I left out is Yuri Perez as far as injured Miami starters who will eventually be back. Again, there's no real timeline on him, so.
And I'm nervous that there isn't a timeline.
Yeah, for sure. Me too. I just think there's enough pitching in Miami to make it all fit, but I don't think there'll ever be enough where they don't need Puck. And I think Miami in their bullpen is okay. Like, they have a lot of, like, I'm not a Tanner Scott hater. I'm not like the number one Tanner Scott fan, but I don't mind him. Andrew mm-hmm. Nardi, I think, is fine. Anthony Bender's fine. Sixto Sanchez is interesting coming back now as a reliever. We'll just see what happens with
that. I'm intrigued with that too.
I think there's a lot of arms there. So I just think that, I think Puck will stay in the rotation, and I would obviously rather have him than anyone that we've talked about from like Meyer.
Well, and he costs a lot.
He's going way earlier. Yeah, he's going way earlier. His spring was more dominant, and his strikeout upside is higher.
Yeah. AJ Puck won the 15th round in my draft.
Picks. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Question from Uncle Ted. What do you think about Jordan Hicks? He's been really good. Yes, he has been. And I've been skeptical about Jordan Hicks. The whole transition to starting thing. The fact that they've tried this before and it didn't take. I think that, granted, it wasn't the Giants with him, but it's been tried before with Jordan Hicks before and it didn't take, but he's been pretty sweet this spring.
Yeah. Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's been really good. I have no shares, and I'm with you. I haven't been able to take either. I haven't been optimistic on him at all, but I don't know. Maybe I should start coming around. I don't know. I don't really feel it. So someone who's worked as a reliever his mm-hmm. whole, basically his whole career, you're right, he did have 8 starts once. He's basically works as a reliever his whole career. He has a 3.85 ERA and a 1.30 whip. Very few pitchers transition from reliever to starter and have their ratios get better. Right?
That's right.
They almost always get worse. So if we're going to go worse on a 1.30 whip, he's not going to be a very successful starter.
Right.
That's how I viewed him all offseason. Whereas, AJ Puck, I think, his whip could get worse. I don't know. I think he could be worse, but still be effective. Hicks, I don't buy it, but at least pitching in San Fran is really good, and he had a really good spring training. I've got to give him that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I didn't get in on him either. It's for that reason. I just felt like as a reliever, although he throws super hard, as a reliever, he wasn't that dominant.
Yeah.
That's even a strikeout rate as a reliever is barely it's in the nines, K per nine. It's in the nines. That's not good for a late inning reliever. That wasn't that good. So I don't see why his strikeout rate as a starter will be that good. Despite how hard he throws, he usually struggles to put hitters away. Now, he did that really well in spring training, but spring training, you face a wide variety of players who are up to the plate for a wide variety with a wide variety of goals. Right. And not always to grind out at bats.
Right.
So I'm still skeptical.
Yeah, I am too. Yeah. I am too. Casey Mize won a job in Detroit. He beat out Matt Manning, who was sent down, and Sawyer Gibson Long, who is hurt. Are you buying any Casey Mize?
No.
No.
I have him below everyone on the list. What do you think? He was a first overall pick in 2018. So I guess if I'm going to get a pedigree, I should give him a little more credit. There's a reason, though, that I'm not buying into Casey Mize, and it's just that the strikeout rate before he was injured was so poor. Like, in his career, he's thrown 188 and two-thirds innings. He has 148 strikeouts. So just the strikeout rate, like, unless he can strike out batters at a much higher rate than he did previously in the majors, like, he just can't be that. In 2021, he had a 3.71 ERA and a 1.14 whip. So he was valuable. But the strikeout rate, just like 30 starts he made that year, and he had 118 strikeouts.
Yeah.
The ceiling, if the strikeout rate stays down, the ceiling stays down.
I kind of wonder if he could have, you know, I still question durability. I still question how deep into games is he going. So I'm been kind of a little shy going after him too.
I'll take him over Jordan Hicks. I was trying to compare him to Weathers. I think I'll take Weathers, but it's close.
Okay.
I'd rather take Meyer.
All right. How about Jared Jones? Made the rotation for the Pirates, is going to start the third game of the season for them.
Yeah. He among this whole group is probably the one I'm the least familiar with. I didn't see, I guess I saw it coming that he would make it and start in the rotation. He's another really good prospect, not as high as a draft stock as these other guys, but last year in the minors, 146 strikeouts and 126 innings, and he's made 15 starts, 16 appearances in AAA. So he's got some experience at the upper levels. Do you think Paul Skenes is frustrated, by the way, that Jared Jones got a rotation spot and he didn't?
Jared Jones at least was in the minors last year. Skenes threw six professional innings. So
that's true. Yeah.
I can defend that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Which one of them will go higher in drafts next year?
Skenes.
Yeah. Maybe even if there's Memorial Day drafts or something, Skenes might go higher in those too.
Yeah.
Anyways, back to Jared Jones. I'm less sure of how I want to comment on him. I would say I would rank him if I was fabbing all these pitchers. After Meyer, I'm going to put him after Weathers. I kind of with Weathers and Mize, maybe after both of them.
Yeah.
Do you think I'm too pessimistic?
Maybe.
The Pirates too.
Well, Pirates, that rubs both ways. Good ballpark.
Yep.
Maybe not a great team behind him. I think I'd take Jones over both Weathers and Mize.
Okay. Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. Yep. Clay Link is big on Jared Jones, for what it's worth.
Okay.
Just thought, yeah, I saw him get him in Tout, and I think he has him in the Staff Keeper League too. Rotowire Staff Keeper League. So, okay. I'm interested because Clay is good at this sort of thing.
Yep.
All right. Ryan Nelson, a guy I actually drafted in the main, in part because of the velocity improvement. Pitcherless Nick Pollock has been all over Nelson this draft season, has been bringing him up a lot. Nelson has earned the starting job, and it's now the fourth place because of their injuries, because of Eduardo Rodriguez's injury. I think Nelson has a chance to have a long-term spot in this rotation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. Like you said, like, he could be the fourth starter now. It'd be him or Tommy Henry as far as who gets labeled the fourth starter. Really, they'll both get some run, and we'll see who's pitching better at the time where Rodriguez is ready to come back. As far as Nelson, like you said, velocity's up this spring. Some people like Nick Pollock are touting him. Strikeout rate is up this spring. He struck out 26 in 20 innings. I try not to get too carried away because of the batters you sometimes face in the spring.
Right.
With strikeout rate. Still quite hittable. Like, his whip this spring was 143. Again, I don't want to get carried away with small sample sizes, but that's what you're doing with these late round guys. It's trying to grasp at straws, trying to find something there. So WHIP was still 143 this spring. His results last year were poor. He has the most experience of all them. I guess Mize might pre-surgery, but he made 27 starts last year, 5.31 ERA, so 142 WHIP. So the strikeout rate really poor last year, 96 strikeouts. So I haven't bought in. I haven't got on board. I've been leaving him for everyone else. I think if I was fabbing them right now, I would put him after the Mize, Jones, Weathers combo. What round did you take Nelson in?
I took Nelson at 23.1. Okay. So a little earlier than some of these. Like I like him better than Nelson and Mize. I like Nelson better than Weathers and Mize. That seems to be my stopgap there. Of these, like I think I like Meyer better. I haven't been on Hicks, but I think I like Hicks. I think I might go Hicks ahead of him. I don't know. Maybe that's not true. I don't know.
I was just doing a quick search. He has the latest NFBC main event ADP of all the guys so far.
Okay.
Not to say that there's anything right about that, but the other guys are typically, his was 383. Now he started to emerge a little later. So some of that could be tainted by the initial main event drafts. His was 383. The other guys we talked about were more in the, if I was going to do generally, like in the about 50 picks before him, but that doesn't mean like he could be starting to pick up steam now. Okay. And I also think that maybe, and I might be guilty of this, that sometimes we are too skewed by the past results. So it's better in my mind, unfortunately, it's better for Max Meyer or Ryan Weathers that they have, and Jared Jones, that they have very, very limited or no previous results. Whereas Ryan Nelson has like a full season of badness last year. And then that makes me out on him. And I maybe shouldn't be so out on someone. Like maybe those were the growing pains he needs to go through.
Right. That's possible.
And maybe I jump on Jared Jones instead because the excitement of the unknown is better than the guy who sat on my waiver wire all last year and Ryan Nelson. But maybe.
And in fact, when people were drafting Nelson earlier this year, I was like, who's Ryan Nelson? Ryan Nelson.
Yep. Yeah.
And then,
yes, I was kind of like that too. I'm like, you mean the crummy pitcher on the Diamondbacks?
Yeah.
So you think there's something new with him. Nick thinks there's something new with him. So that makes sense. And maybe I should be more open to that. There's something new with him rather than just saying, well, he stunk last year, so I'd rather roll the dice on Jared Jones. Like maybe that's too simplistic.
Exactly. Yeah. Five more pitchers to talk about. Bowden Francis, Blue Jays. I got him in Tout Wars. You said that you've had some interest in him. He's going to be the starter for now. Of course, you know, there's a risk factor there that when everybody's healthy, he might lose the job, but you still like him a lot?
I wouldn't say like a lot, but I like him enough.
You
like,
still love him. You have a framed picture of him, you know?
He's on my Cy Young long list for this year.
You asked for autographs. You slid into the DMs asking for autographs.
So he's a totally different case than a lot of these guys in that he's not a big prospect. He was a seventh round pick several years ago, was not a huge touted prospect coming up through the minors. But what I do know about him is the Jays like him. Like the Jays management team likes him. They liked what he did last year in the bullpen. They went into spring training thinking that he was a candidate, maybe the top candidate if they needed an extra starter. He pitched well in spring training. Not like incredible, but he pitched well in spring training. They feel really good about him. I think he'll be in the rotation for a while. Like, I don't think Alek Manoah is coming back anytime soon.
No,
I don't think he can come. Like, he was so bad last year. Like, he needs to get healthy and then go pitch in Buffalo for a while.
I agree with you on that.
They can't just, like, you can't have Alek Manoah do 3 weeks of rehab and then rehab starts or something and then bring him back. Like, that's not going to happen. He's going to be, Bowden Francis, if he pitches well, I think will be in the Jays rotation the whole year or as long as he needs to be.
Yeah.
Like, as long as he wants. As long, like, I don't know what his innings limit will be, but he'll be in the Jays rotation as long as plenty long enough if he pitched well to justify any fab bids. So, I don't worry about his job security at all. It's just whether he can be a successful major league starter. He was a successful reliever last year. He was a successful starter in spring training. I did take him in a regular. I took him in the 40-something round of our Tout Wars draft. But then I bumped him up with all these injuries, and I did take him in about round 28, 29 in my last NFBC draft. So Right. He's moved into that group for me. His ADP is around the same as Ryan Nelson. I put Francis, I don't know, maybe I'm a sucker for him because it's my hometown team, but I'm not usually like that with the Jays, but I'm going to put him behind Meyer, but I'm going to put him for me in the Weathers group. I think Francis has as much upside as Mize based on what I've seen from Mize's strikeout rate in the past. He's just not a big name prospect.
Right. I think that's about right.
I could see him grinding out like okay numbers.
Mize has the advantage of ballpark and division, Toronto.
Although Rogers Centre played really pitcher friendly last year.
Yeah. I was just
like, which I think a lot of people haven't noticed. I think it was something like 24th for hitters last year.
And I read something too. It might be like the batter's eye was really an issue there that they,
and they moved the fences last year, right?
Yeah. So they did a lot of changes last year, significant changes to the ballpark there. All right. I'm going to group the final four pitchers together because we're running a little long here. So these four pitchers, Garrett Crochet, Tyler McGill, Luis Gil, and Tyler Alexander, who's pitching for the Rays with all their injuries. Who catches your eye the most? Who are you willing to roster? Who are you fading?
Okay. I'm way out on Tyler Alexander. Not even pitching for the Rays is enough to get me fired up about him for now. We'll see. Okay. But I included him because anyone who pitches for the Rays, I think, needs to be considered. But I'm out on him. Garrett Crochet, I really like, but I worry how many innings he can throw. I also worry that pitching for the White Sox is a terrible job description. Yeah. I sneakily kind of like Tyler McGill. I remember back to when Tyler McGill was a thing a few years ago, and then he couldn't get healthy. Remember that earlier in a season when, or at one point, I can't remember if it was early in the season or not, but when Tyler McGill, people were kind of excited about him.
Right.
His rookie year, he struck out 99 in 89 innings and people were kind of excited. They were like, maybe we got something here. Since then, he hasn't really been able to get healthy, but he looks better this year in spring training. So I would say now, okay, I'm the most excited about Crochet. I put him at the top of my fab bidding, get him in our labor league. And I put McGill after him. And pretty sure I did get McGill. Okay. Luis Gil, I'm interested in, but when they get healthy, I don't know if there's a spot for him.
Yeah, but they're not going to get healthy. They're not going to get healthy, though. I mean,
yeah, I know.
Holds out for a long, really long time.
So I guess I should be okay. So I think in this whole pitcher group, I'm going to kind of go Crochet and Meyer at the top, and then like next tier, and maybe I'm a sucker for McGill, but McGill and Heal, and then my next tier would be like Weathers, Jones, Mize, and Francis.
That's fair. That makes sense. I'm looking to see who I got. I got Jared Jones actually in our league in labor.
Okay.
I missed out on Griffin Jacks 9-7. I missed out on Gavin Stone 8-5, but I did get Jared Jones. So not unhappy with that. Luis Gil actually went for 9 in our league too.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, I could see that. Yankees hype on top of everything else. Like, he's a good prospect, but then you throw in that he's a Yankee. Like, I wonder if Luis Gil was joining the Royals rotation or the Angels rotation. If he was joining the Angels rotation, he would have gone for 3.
Yep.
But either way, like, I think from this group that we just discussed, and we tried to discuss about a dozen, 10 or 12 pitchers, like, a couple of these guys are going to have long-term value. A few of them are going to have short-term value and some will have no value, but they're going to be real. This group is going to be very important this season.
Yeah, they are. They are. And probably like 2 of these pitchers are going to work out. 2 will be okay, and the other 4 will be disasters.
Yeah. For people, like you were mentioning, people who haven't fabbed yet, like if you drafted earlier and your first fab's on Sunday, like, this is the group you need to get to know. Like, you need to create a waterfall with all these pitchers in it, and you're only going to have roster room to take 1 or 2 of them. Right. So you're going to have to create a waterfall with all these pitchers in it. You're going to have to figure out the order that you want. You're going to figure out how much you want to spend, and you're going to get 1 or 2. And they're going to they're all dart throws, but they're going to quickly separate.
They are. Yeah. And it's funny. We say this in various pockets. Oh, you can group them all together, but some are, they're not going to end up together. They start together, but they don't end together. So getting the right one's so important.
A couple of them. Yes. One or two of them are going to, throw 5 scoreless innings in their first start and all of a sudden skyrocket away from everyone else.
Yeah. Paul Spohr is the guy that got Heal in our group, and he spent 9 out of his 100. So he was aggressive.
That is aggressive. I do think, though,
aggressive.
So I do think that the way starting pitching we've seen this last year is dries up and teams start running out of starters and then they go to guys who can't do the job or bullpen committee games, things like that. Like, if you see pitchers early in the year that are interesting, I think it's worth going after them. My very last team I drafted, I went really, I tried to load my bench with a bunch of these pitchers because I'm afraid that I'm going to run, otherwise I'm going to run out and I'm going to be dying for them. You talked with Scott a lot last season when you do your Fab recaps about how there were no starters on the waiver wire.
Yeah. And I like to have 5 to 6 of my 7 bench spots allocated towards hitting. We've said it before, say it again. Stream from your bench if possible. Try not to stream from the waiver wire.
So yeah. So you said for towards hitting, but you want it towards pitching.
Towards pitching. Did I say hitting? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I usually want 5 pitchers, 2 hitters. Yeah.
That's right. And then later in the year, you can go the other way if there's just no one to get. You know, like you a couple of your pitchers have gotten hurt and there's just no one to grab on the waiver wire. So now you've got a middle reliever or more hitters on your bench. But this is the time of year to have the extra starters while they're healthy.
Right. And I you know, of those hitters, I'm not going to bother with the third catcher. In a DC, that's different, but I'm not going to do that with a cat in a place where I only have 7 man benches.
No, yeah.
Ideally, I get an infielder that gets both middle and corner eligibility and then call it a day there and get one outfielder. It doesn't always work out that way, but that's the way I usually like to structure it and then go the rest. I've been as extreme as having 6 pitchers out of 7 on my bench too. Cause you know, you want to, these guys we're drafting them. The working theory is they're better than the class of pitchers that are free agents.
That's right. The problem that you run into on an NFBC style format is if you don't have IL slots, you probably already have a couple of slots already soaked up now by guys who are hurt. Even if you tried not to make that happen, it probably happened anyways. So then your bench quickly becomes 5. And then, but like you said, if you've got 5 on your bench, you want 3 or 4 to be pitchers.
Yeah. And you're going to want enough pitchers to avoid like Coors Field starts, Dodger starts, certain teams. Because to do that, you're going to need some volume. So load up your bench with more pitchers.
That's right. And right now, this is the group you can go and get that we just discussed to load up your bench. Indeed. And then see how they do in the next few weeks, stream them a bit, you know, look for matchups that are favorable and then figure out maybe who are the keepers from this group.
Yep.
During April, because there's not going to be another group like this just emerge in June. After by the middle of May, they're going to start coming up in dribs and drabs from the minors, and you're going to be grasping at straws like, I guess I'll try them. There will be guys who will come up from the minors and emerge, but it won't be a massive pile of starters. We've seen that.
Right. Yeah. I think that's absolutely right. So, one last question in the chat, asking to add one more hitter from Christian Encarnacion Strand, Josh Young, or Anthony Santander. I'm going CES, but I am wearing my Reds colored glasses. So just take that with.
Oh, CES by a mile. And I'm in a Blue Jays hoodie right now. CES by a mile in that group. Now that his playing time's opened up, I wish I had shares. I remember we debated him during the labor draft.
Oh, yeah.
You ended up taking him.
Yep.
I wish I had shares.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Good. I'm glad we're in lockstep on that. Yeah. Good way to finish the draft, the podcast here today. Yeah. All right. Big thanks to all of you guys. Thanks to everybody streaming and everybody listening. Everybody who listened later online. Thanks to Fantrax, Rivals, Vivid, Rival Fantasy. That is not Rivals, but Rival Fantasy, Vivid Seats, and of course, being on the Blue Wire Network. Please, if you like this podcast or you like any of our podcasts, hit the like, subscribe buttons there. And also, check out RotoWire, rotowire.com/pod, free peek behind the paywall. 2 free days, no credit card required. We're going to sign off for now. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.